We continue now with more from the 2002 Port Townsend Writers Conference. For many attendees, the highlight of the 29th annual conference has been the appearance of Youssef Komunyakaa, Chancellor of the American Academy of Poets, professor at Princeton University, and author of 12 books of poetry, including Neon Vernacular, for which he was awarded the Pulitzer Prize for Poetry in 1994. We welcome Youssef to talk about his life, his work, the combination of jazz and poetry, and other subjects. Youssef, a pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Can you tell us about the origin of your name?
Not exactly. No. What I mean by that is that I've written about that, so I usually tell people to go to my work for that. But I can say that it has a lot to do with my grandfather coming from Trinidad in the 1920s.
Excellent. Growing up in Bogalusa, Louisiana.
Yeah.
Your friends were enchanted by the doo-wop singers of the 50s, but you began to hear words in a different way.
Slightly different, yes. I suppose I began to listen to the landscape around me, how the landscape pretty much spoke to me. And I've said someplace that we internalize a landscape and everything else is filtered through that. But also I listen to the radio. The radio was like a shrine, so I heard gospel, Brother Joe Mays, coming out of New Orleans. I don't know. I suppose I'm influenced by a number of different kinds of music, not just I've gone back to the doo-wop, sort of in retrospect, you know. To see what I had missed.
Can you give us a sense of the lay of the land in Bogalusa?
The lay of the land in Bogalusa? I've said somewhere that if one drops a seed, something sprouts. Maybe not vegetation, but at least an idea. I think of it as a very vibrant landscape in many ways. I would sort of lose myself in that landscape. So it was informative in a certain sense.
And those radio stations coming out of New Orleans.
Out of New Orleans, Jackson, Mississippi, whatever, Nashville even.
Yeah, clear channel radio stations.
Right,
AM
right,
station.
Yes.
There's one big one in New Orleans. I forget what it was.
WWOC, I think.
Is that what it was? Yeah. Where you can hear on a clear night, you can hear clear up in Chicago.
Oh, is there? I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm a radio guy, so when I moved from Chicago to Baltimore in Florida, late at night, I'd listen to the Chicago stations.
Right. Yeah.
And I think that was the intent of the Federal Communications Commission, because that was the entertainment before television.
Right.
You know, hearing the big bands or whatever from the Aragon Ballroom in Chicago.
Yes.
So people gather around the radio. And in your family, you were a poet in a family that valued working with their hands. Or you turned out to be a poet.
Right. I turned out to be a poet. But rituals of work, I think, probably inform my work as well. My father was a carpenter, and everything was centered on a certain kind of precision. And I would like to think that very methodical precision has something to do with writing today, at least writing poems.
The measure twice, cut once philosophy.
Right, that's right, yes. Yeah.
How do you think that's worked its way into your process?
Well, it has a lot to do with revising, the ability to go back and re-experience something, to not whittle the poem down to a precise expression, but to know when something doesn't work and when it does. To be willing to grow with a piece. Yeah. At least I hope so.
Willing to grow. Could you elaborate on that?
Well, initially, the way that I compose is that I write everything down, and then I very systematically cut back everything to the central components of a piece. And in a certain sense, in cutting back, there's also an enlargement. It's that idea that sometimes less is more. So one grows for the simple reason that one grows with the silence in a woven into a given piece of work, because we want everything to be said so forthrightly. The silence, the space, and we need a kind of silence and space that we can sort of fit our hearts into. And usually we don't arrive to a piece with that at least intact, but the idea might be lingering somewhere in the background.
I don't want to get into jazz so much until our next interview, but this is reminding me of Miles Davis playing The Spaces and being influenced by Ahmad Jamal and Monk, who you talk about in your
essays.
You were going to be a psychologist before starting to write poetry in 1973. You laugh about that.
Yeah, well, up until recently, I let go of that idea. But for a long time, the idea lingered there. I said, well, have I really gone to the right direction? Is it something I'll return to later on? So the obsession was there until recently. And now I said it's too late to go back to that. I've sort of revised my life in that sense.
Is poetry therapeutic?
No, not really. At least not for me. But maybe there are elements that might be therapeutic for an overall project, because many people think about the Vietnam-influenced poems. Are those really therapeutic poems? I said no, in a way, because I'm constantly revisiting that territory, because I'm often reading those poems or rereading them, you know. So it isn't therapeutic in that sense. It's a way of getting down a certain kind of reality. And in that sense, if that's therapeutic, then it is. But I don't know.
Cathartic might be a better word.
Yes.
Yeah. But then, of course, you're re-experiencing that, so then you're, in some cases, reliving the hell that you...
Right.
Yeah, I don't know anything therapeutic about that.
Right.
We're talking with Youssef Komunyakaa, Chancellor of the American Academy of Poets, professor at Princeton University, and author of 12 books, including Pleasure Dome, Talking Dirty to the Gods, and Neon Vernacular, which won the Pulitzer Prize for Poetry. I'm Paul Nelson. Talk about the Vietnam War. During the war, many poets were protesting it. Some were trying to levitate the Pentagon or writing poems against it. You chose to serve. Can you tell us about that decision?
Well, some of us, I don't think, really had the privilege of making any other decision. For various reasons, of course.
Race being one of them?
Race perhaps being one of them. And also, for me, I always had my fingers crossed. I had this idea that the war would be over before I actually set foot in Vietnam. But of course, that was wishful thinking. So a kind of daydreaming that was taking place. This was in my psyche, I think, at the time. However, when I got to Vietnam, I did identify with the landscape. And in that sense, I'm just wondering if there was some part of me just had to see what was happening, to experience that, even though for many it was a life and death sentence. I don't know, but in retrospect, I'm thinking that perhaps that was one of the forces that need to become a witness. I don't know.